This is Talk for Food. Your portal into quantum possibility. I'm Adam Abraham. Each week, I'll be your guide on this expedition where we'll explore the near and far reaches of this thing called life on Earth and beyond. Talk for Food is brought to you by Philos Books, publishers of I Am My Body Not, A Freed Man, an Emancipation Proclamation, and Transdermal Magnesium Therapy, and producers of Understanding MMS, Conversations with Jim Humble, the only feature-length documentary on the subject of the miracle mineral supplement on Earth. Hello again, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to another edition of Talk for Food, which comes to you each week over webtalkradio.net. I'm Adam Abraham, and this is our time to set our conceptions, our conventions of thinking, of feeling, of fearing, and of distrusting aside and journey into realms of quantum possibility with open hearts, with open minds, and with a sense and feeling of oneness with the power that rests within us all, the force, the presence that allows change of our heart to become the rule rather than the exception, to be the carrot that we finally taste and benefit from, as opposed to that which always remains just outside of our reach, just outside of our grasping, just outside of our satisfaction from having reunified ourselves with it. It is a great day. It is always a great day if you see the greatness that the day allows, that the day portends. Every day has it. Every moment has within it the core of greatness. But it does require each of us to see that potential, not only to see it, to be looking for it. You know, we basically get what we look for. Energy follows attention, and attention follows intention. Intention is what directs our attention to various places, to various experiences, to various outcomes. Attention follows it, and energy follows that. And reality organizes itself around the energy, the energetic field that we create. Now, if you're a regular listener to Talk for Food, you understand everything I'm saying. I realize that for new listeners, this could be Greek, all right? This could be woo-woo, far as you know, or far as it sounds, because we all have our language, and language itself has meaning, and it has power. Basically, again, according to what we give it. And so if you have been searching for and seeking to understand the factors and the dynamics that go into the formation of the human experience, then what I am saying to you is ringing true to you, because why? You have been searching for it. You have resonated with yourself. You have come to that place. I am basically presenting these ideas, these thoughts that you are either already onto, or it is fleshing them out for you, or in some cases, something deep within you has brought you here so that you can hear this. Maybe it's a wake-up call. You know, we are all able to know more, to understand more, because that is part of the human journey. It is a continuum. It is a journey of consciousness. It is a journey of awakening. And how do we change our life? That is the fundamental question that is addressed in everything we do at Talk for Food, is how do we change our life consciously? Because our life will change and is always in a state of change. We've heard many, many times that the only constant is change. But conscious change is not constant, all right? Change is always happening, but it can happen unconsciously or consciously. So our basic opportunity here is to go from an unconscious way of experiencing change to a conscious one. And there are ways to do that. And this is something that we will always be looking at getting better at. We will always be looking at bringing forth greater consciousness into the nature of being. And because it comes from an understanding and an appreciation and a discovery of who we are. And so let's talk a little bit about what this show is going to be about, okay? Because it's a subtext that will always be there. You are always going to be central to the unfolding of your experience, always, more so than anyone or anything else that's perceived to be outside of you. Now, there's been a lot of discussion, a lot of attention has been raised with the subject of MMS and its use and its proliferation or its warning, as the case may be, as has happened with the FDA and the Food Standards Agency in the United Kingdom and various agencies around the world. We've talked about it before, and we're going to talk about it some more because there are what I've been experiencing quite lately, especially on my blog, Thought for Food, has been an influx, if you will, of people who have found the blog, found this information, and they are basically dead set on waking up these, I don't know, wayward souls who are seeing that chlorine dioxide and the use of MMS is helpful, and they are set on saying that it is bleach and it is dangerous, it's industrial strength, and Jim Humble is a charlatan, and blah, 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 blah. It's constant, it's consistent, and they have their reasons for it, and I'm not here to speculate on what their motivations are, but I am here to speculate or to talk about some of the methods. I have some alternate theories, and I'd like to share some of those alternate theories about MMS, about chlorine dioxide, how it works, and I also want to look at some of our conventions of water treatment, because the FDA and in their warnings are saying that all of the benefits that people have reported, and of course they're saying, and they said that the vendors, basically the sellers, just claim these things to make them, you know, snake oil, if you will, but they said that they were unrelated. And we need to look at that. Is it truly unrelated? So what we're going to do, we're going to take a break. When we come back, you got me for this show, all right? And you got my thoughts, one on chlorine dioxide, MMS, and its use. We will also talk about chlorination. We'll talk about water. And I have some very interesting information that goes more also into how it works, because we have somewhat been mystified, too, about what it and how this little molecule has, which has done so much for so many already, how it does what it does. And it's a greater question of how nature does what it does. So let's take a break. When we'll come back after a few messages, and we'll talk about MMS and water and transformation with me, Adam Abraham, when Talk for Food returns on webtalkradio.net. Nuclear war. It's time for me to say something new on my radio show here about photonic water systems and the photonic water transformation technology that was developed by Clayton Nolte. If you don't know it, if you haven't seen it, we have many videos now of people who have experienced the results of transforming, of re-establishing the optimal state of their water that happens through these water transformation devices. We have created photonicwater.com, and it is an informational site, but it is also a brand. We are taking steps now to make it grow, to expand it into a product not only that is manufactured, but also delivers the transformational impact that we have now seen over the last year and a half, but we will go from where we are now to even more permutations of it. I'm just letting you know right now, go to photonicwater.com. We are building a brand at this point, so I'm going to be referring to Photonic Water, photonicwater.com. And this is part of the transition, part of the growth, not only of a product, but also of a way of addressing something that is so critical. It is more critical than any medicine or anything else. Water is what makes life as we know it happen. And if the water is not healthy, then life as we know it is also, guess what, not healthy. So creating healthy water, which is what this technology does, has a major impact on our ability to be healthy and to sustain it. So visit photonicwater.com. Learn more about what's really inside you, in addition to a wonderful spirit. All right, this segment of Talk for Food starts here on webtalkradio.net with Adam Abraham. And you've got me today. We're going to talk about MMS. As we did last week when we had some parts of the MMS workshop with Jim Humble, talking about the protocol and talking about how to use it and administer it, that we did, which is a part of the DVD, the workshop 8-disc DVD, which is now becoming available. As I am speaking right now, it's in the final stages of remanufacturing, as I flubbed, if you will, and made a 4-disc set originally, and the initial ones that we sent out just created problems I didn't see in the beginning and didn't appear to be there. So once we realized that they are being redone, and then there are new orders, people are availing themselves of this. And so that is also something that is will be of available and will be of interest to you. But MMS itself, which Jim Humble is now calling the master mineral supplement. Now, I've always contended it wasn't a miracle. It was just wonderful chemistry. I wrote an article to that effect that's on my blog, Thought for Food, and itself has been read by well over 100,000 people. And I have now made that article available on a PDF. And if you are interested in that, you can email me at adam@talkforfood.com. I'm also considering writing a book on MMS myself, and which is part of where we are. Let's say it's my take, okay? Because there are some points of how it is explained, and those points, the way it is explained in terms of how MMS and what it does, is in part where the incredulity comes in, where the skepticism comes in for some people. Now, to me, the effects, the results that you get speak very much louder than the explanation of how you get there. I'm concerned about what happens when this product is used, as opposed to the minutia on how it goes about doing it. So even for the last 3 years, there have been some ongoing discussions about MMS and how it does it, because when people, or if people can't wrap their minds around how it does this minute thing, which all we can do is have and present conjecture on, and yet they are willing to ignore the results. So when a person has had some type of a chronic illness for years and years and years, and they find that after a short period of time, relatively speaking, that problem has gone away, you'll get some who are analyzing the microbial minutia in terms of how did it get there. And if they cannot quantify and account for the efficacy of each one of those parts, they ignore the results. They ignore the fact that something wonderful has happened, and they don't participate in that wonder. It's very easy, in fact, you know, if you connect with the wonder and stay with that, eventually you will find yourself having some aha moments on the process itself, on the minutia. But what's more important? Is the minutia the most important, or is it the effects? I vote for the effects. I vote for the change. If the change that has come out of this use of this product is preferred, then let's continue to give some energy, some thought, some consideration to it. And let's figure out how to use it even better. Let's figure out how to expand this wonderment as opposed to getting stuck in a debate and a conversation in our heads about what a microbe did or did not do or how it went about happening. So what we're going to do here, though, we're going to talk about it. I said that we have, and I have some, what I call some alternate theories of MMS. And I'm going to go over some, and also we're going to talk about or share a clinical trial, a study that was done by the USDA, which is very helpful in explaining some of this as well. But let's start off with the idea and the presentation of MMS and how it works. One of the things that has been said is that MMS is selective and that essentially it acts on. We know that the chlorine dioxide molecule is an oxidizer, all right? The detractors, the disbelievers, if you will, or the denouncers, let's call them that, they say this is industrial bleach, all right? And the code word is on bleach. They repeat that word over and over and over again, as though by calling it bleach, you're going to have this aversion response, a gag response, even at the idea that this is bleach. And yet, I'm not going to deny that it's bleach because by the definition of what a bleach does as a whitener, that is typically what is associated with it. However, there are many different types of bleaches, and you ultimately have to look at the chemical itself and what are the properties of the chemical, what are the properties of the molecule to determine what the behaviors are. And so chlorine and chlorine dioxide are oftentimes lumped together in a singularity or as a singularity, when in fact, as chemicals, they have very, very different behaviors. Now, the truth is, having chlorine associated with a molecule is not a bad thing. In fact, chlorine is a part of life. It's a part of nature. And having, in fact, you cannot live without salt. Salt is sodium chloride. It is sodium and it is chlorine. Together, they behave in a certain way that if you don't have enough of it, you don't live. We cannot. Salt water is the largest reservoir of life on this planet. And it's chlorine in there, guys. It is chlorine. And in fact, you and I are walking around with salt water inside our bodies. There is chlorine as a part of that because you cannot have salt without the bonding of sodium and chloride, okay? So the fact that chlorine is a part of this is not the issue at all because it's a part of nature, it's a part of life, it's a part of what makes life possible. Chlorine dioxide is a chlorine ion that has bonded with two oxygen ions. And together, they form very, very different behavior. Let's talk about just backing up a step too, even talking about another form of bonding is magnesium chloride. We know about transdermal magnesium therapy, which talks about the liquid form that magnesium is available in. And it is formed through a bonding of chlorine and magnesium. Magnesium is a loner, if you will. It needs to interact, a bond with something else in order to be, if you will, and chlorine is one of them. So bonding and getting together, if you will, of various minerals is not new, or various elements of the periodic table. It is how life actually organizes itself, and you have different behaviors. So calling chlorine a bleach or calling chlorine dioxide a bleach is unto itself no big deal. The issue is what is the behavior of the specific molecule you're talking about? What does it do and what are the effects of it? That is where there is a world of difference. And that world of difference is described in my documentary, Understanding MMS, Conversations with Jim Humble. And we're going to talk a little bit about it now. But I'm going to say here, you're listening to Talk for Food on webtalkradio.net with Adam Abraham, and you're hearing me, Adam Abraham, talk. I'm the guest for today's show. We're talking first about MMS and its function. We're going to present some, and we are presenting some alternative theories on how MMS works. And we're also going to talk about some of the orthodox practices that could stand to be, let's say, looked at with some fresh eyes, okay? And some of it based on some of the things that we're talking about right now. Now, as it relates to chlorine dioxide, so we've talked a bit about how chlorine differs from chlorine dioxide in its chemical makeup. And the fact is that it being bleach and not bleach is not really the factor. The factor is this. If you're talking about chlorine, from a chemical standpoint, chlorination, when it interacts with other elements, organic matter particularly, it produces new chemistry. It binds with them. It gets entangled, if you will, with them. We can talk in terms of electrical bonding. And in so doing, there are new chemicals spun off from the process. Those new chemicals are called THMs, or trihalomethanes. And there is it's a group of them. And there's another chemical that is spun off from the bonding of chlorine and other organic matter. And that chemical is called chloroform. Now, the trihalomethanes, let's put it this way, they have a detrimental effect on the body. Chloroform has a detrimental effect on physiology, okay, on life, if you will, on microbial life. It has a detrimental effect. And yet, chlorine dioxide, from a chemical standpoint, produces no THMs. It produces no new chemistry at all. It produces no chloroform. So in other words, working by oxidation, it will reduce the presence of the things that it reacts to and reacts on. And I'm going to talk about that a little bit. But there is a reduction that occurs when chlorine dioxide is used. But in the process of doing that reduction, no new chemistry is produced. No trihalomethanes, no chloroform. Essentially, when chlorine dioxide is used, then there is a reduction in the amount of toxicity that is in the body, because there is a reduction in the chemistry, in the, I'm going to say, the unnatural chemistry. Let's put it that way. It's the synthetic chemistry, and we'll get into that a little bit. Now, if you get into a point of seeing that there is a difference between chlorine and chlorine dioxide, and we're hearing that the denouncers talk about the dangers of chlorine dioxide, which is not used presently nearly as much as chlorination is. Chlorine dioxide is considered a water purifier, okay? It is considered a toxin reductant, if you will, or inactivator. That is what it is. It is considered that. It is used as such. And it is used as such because it does so, and it does it with the very same results that I just mentioned. It produces no new chemistry. So if there is an anthrax infestation or contamination, if there is mold, and we all know that a moldy environment is an unhealthy one. It can cause greater sickness, if you will, and dis-ease. It's not healthy. It's an oxygen deficient environment. And if mold is growing in an area, it's oxygen deficient. Chlorine dioxide can be used to inactivate, to basically get rid of that mold without producing any new chemistry. That is a simple fact. And yet another fact is that chlorination is by far the predominant method of water treatment in Western society. It has been that for, I don't know, for decades. Certainly, I know in my lifetime, it's certainly been that way, and for, you could say, even for generations. And it is, in fact, stress-causing, stress-producing. It is producing new chemistry, and you can definitely say that chlorination has contributed to the way things are today because so many people are exposed to it. Every time they drink their water, every time they shower and bathe, they're getting chlorine gas. They're getting the effects of what chlorine does, and they're getting those derivative chemicals that are being produced as a result of that interaction of chlorine. And yet, the FDA and the various agencies are calling chlorine dioxide. They're saying, do not use chlorine dioxide because it is this industrial bleach. When in fact, chlorination is producing chemistry that is impacting people on a metabolic level, whether they like it or not. And it is having an effect on health. And yet they're ignoring it. I guess that's really kind of the point. It's generally being ignored, not dismissed, but simply not even looked at. So inculcated has it become into our way of looking at things, our way of doing things. Now, what I'm going to do as I'm seeing that, I'm talking and time is going on. I'm coming up here to time to need a break. I mentioned an alternate theory. And so what we're going to do, we're going to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about some alternate theories on how chlorine dioxide works and some of the logic behind it, and also some science that actually supports and some experiences that I've had or people that I've talked to that support the suggestions that I'm going to be making. So let me take this break. And when we come back, you're going to get a little bit more of me, Adam Abraham, when Talk for Food returns on WebTalkRadio.net.
American adventurer Jim Humble discovered how a simple chemical compound and powerful oxidizer, chlorine dioxide, could be effectively used to reduce toxicity within the human body. The buzz on Jim's discovery, MMS, Miracle Mineral Supplement, is spreading, but not the understanding. Until now. Understanding MMS, Conversations with Jim Humble, is a new DVD available only at understanding-mms.com. The Understanding MMS DVD will show how you can be part of your own solution to toxicity. Here's the documentary producer.
This is Adam Abraham inviting you to get informed and help others to be informed of this amazing way to reduce the body's load of toxins, harmful microorganisms, and pathogens from the waters inside our body.
Get your understanding today for only $29.95 at understanding-mms.com. That's understanding-mms.com. Use passcode RBN to receive 10% off.
Our health really depends on it.
It's interesting that one cup of coffee will lower the electrical charge at the cellular level by about 10 points.
Whoa.
So imagine the person that drinks, you know, the pots of coffee every day.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying, in a sense, because they're short-circuited, because their energy is low, they're trying to keep their energy high. They're, in essence, what I call whipping the horse.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you can whip a horse and it'll run, and you can whip a horse and it'll run, and then it'll lay down and die.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's happening to the human. You look at the person that's whipping the horse, and you see these people, and they're drinking all the coffee, and they start to get dark, sunken eyes and
mm-hmm.
stuff, and they actually form like a mask. I privately call it a death mask. They're going to die from something. They're just wiping out the body's energy system.
If you heard yourself described in the preceding excerpt, you'll want to hear more in this new perception-shifting CD from Philos Media Works. I'm Adam Abraham, Curing Chronic Reverse Polarity, a conversation with Keith Smith, is my heart-to-heart discussion with a long-term cancer conqueror and holder of inner knowledge about an unseen but critically important factor to maintaining and restoring our health. Polarity sets the natural direction and flow of life-sustaining energy through our being. Since it is unseen, it's easy to overlook or dismiss until you understand its impact. A reverse polarity condition is founded in dis-ease. Though it is electromagnetic and not physical, disease and polarity reversal go hand in hand. The good news is that there are ways to turn it around and live again. Learn how with your purchase of Curing Chronic Reverse Polarity today. Just $12.95. Order your copy at shop.understanding-mms.com.
We come in all shapes and sizes, but for all our apparent differences, we share an important oneness.
I am my body,
not.
Now your child can discover the oneness behind human diversity with I Am My Body, Not, from Philos Books. This progressive book, written by Adam Abraham, helps parents and teachers introduce some of the most basic human concepts and questions. Celebrate the body and the spirit with I Am My Body, Not. Order now, just $19.95 plus shipping and handling.
I Am My Body, Not is available at philos.com. That's philos.com. Order yours today.
Hi, this is Mary Meadows, and you're listening to Talk for Food on webtalkradio.net.
All right, this second half of Talk for Food resumes on webtalkradio.net with Adam Abraham. And we are talking about MMS. We are presenting some alternate theories of it. In our first half, I have talked about some of the groundwork, if you will. We've talked about the fact that it is chlorine itself, and the presence of chlorine is not an issue because chlorine is an element, is a natural element, and it goes into many different and binds with many other elements to form very essential compounds that we can't live without. So even having chlorine as a part of a chemical is not the issue. It's basically how it's used. I'd have to say that it's really the intent. It is the intent behind the chemical. It's the intent behind how it's used. It's a thought that went behind it, because that is what affects behavior. And it affects on a molecular level, but it exists and it begins in a quantum field, if you will. So we'll talk a little bit more about that. I hadn't thought even that we'd go in there. But let's talk about, what's the alternate theory? If we're going to talk about an alternate theory, let's look at the theory. The theory of chlorine dioxide is that when it is used, not only is a reduction is occurring, but chlorine dioxide, in contrast to chlorine, works by oxidation, and it works by an exchange of electrons. In essence, when it comes across something, okay, that it is prone to react to, it does it by that something giving up electrons. Electrons, which are themselves, I guess they have been seen, but electrons are also tiny. Anything, any molecule that exists is essentially held together by a number of electrons, and these electrons circle it. They just move around it in an orbit, you know, in the same way that our sun, or not our sun, but our Earth revolves around the sun, or the moon revolves around the Earth. Electrons revolve around a nucleus, a proton, in terms of and they also revolve around compounds or collections of atoms to hold them together, essentially. But the collection of atoms determine how that atom or that compound or that molecule behaves. The electrons hold them or keep them in that orientation. It keeps them in that group. And while that group is intact, there is the behavior that is associated with that that molecule. That's kind of the way it works. Now, what happens, though, is that when the chlorine dioxide molecule comes in contact with whatever it is that it will react to, that encounter will result in the chlorine dioxide accepting up to 5 electrons. So essentially, that the object that is being oxidized will give up to 5 of its electrons to the chlorine dioxide. And in so doing, it comes apart. It is no longer what it was. the field, if you will have been broken. The behavior will have been stopped. The effect will have been nullified, whatever that object was. And I've been purposeful in talking that way in the sense of not indicating what it is, because that's been part of here comes the alternate theory. The idea has been is that chlorine dioxide acts on pathogens, and pathogens have been associated with or assumed to have been initially, they were assumed to be anaerobic microorganisms, bacteria, viruses, anything that did not require oxygen in order to exist, okay? Also, anything that had a low pH, and in fact, that was the original, is that anything that had a low pH was presumed to be anaerobic, acidic, if you will, and the chlorine dioxide would take its electrons, and that would be the end of it. There would be a reduction in the amount of that, whatever that was. Now, in addition to that, the pathogen was presumed and has been presumed, and I'd have to say still is, presumed to be organic in the sense that it's living. It's that it could be a virus, it can be a bacteria, E. coli and Salmonella. People are the MRSA. We are waging war against these microorganisms because they have taken on the role of not even Mighty Mouse, but Superman, okay, the superbugs and stuff like that. That is where our thinking has been, and chlorine dioxide has shown itself to be effective in reducing these organisms without fail, quite frankly. Yardia, E. coli, Salmonella, poliovirus, many, many others have been proven to be eradicated or inactivated with chlorine dioxide. So the present theory is that when chlorine dioxide encounters a pathogen considered to be a bacteria or virus, it could be mold, it could be a fungus, but there is the idea that it is a good or bad, okay? There are certain bad bacteria, there are certain good ones. Now, typically the ones that are aerobic, which you and I are aerobic, we breathe oxygen. The process of breathing oxygen is how we live. And then there are those that are anaerobic, that do not require oxygen in order to live. Now, the idea here is that those are the ones that are the bad guys. My alternate theory is that there are no bad guys. There are no bad microorganisms. My alternate theory is that the anaerobic microorganisms, they show up in response to that which is non-living. The issue has to do with what is living and what is not. Chemicals that stress, that kill, even on a microbial level, the chemicals that suck up oxygen, if you will, that cause oxygen aerobic microorganisms to die off, they are antagonistic. They bring their own stress. They upset the balance within the body. Chemicals now, and a lot of these chemicals, let's begin with chlorine. Chlorine is one such chemical that produces derivative chemicals which will and do have a population-reducing effect on aerobic microorganisms. Now, what happens if there are no organisms that don't require oxygen in our body? If we don't have organisms, microorganisms, that don't require oxygen, then when you're taking in something that sucks oxygen up, that absorbs it, that takes it up and kills off oxygen respiring or oxygen breathing microorganisms, you got a quick death. Unless there are organisms that do not require oxygen. Or on the other hand, that there are organisms that can absorb much of this inorganic material, such as a fungus or yeast may do. I mean, these are the types of things that are occurring. So if we need anaerobic microorganisms, if we are in an oxygen depleted state, or, and I say we, I'm not even on a systemic level, if we're talking about even in a specific area of the body, if a specific area of the body is in an oxygen depleted state and anaerobic microorganisms show up because they don't require oxygen, they don't require oxygen, but what do? They allow metabolism to occur. It may be at a depressed, it may be at a less than optimal state, but it allows for the perpetuation of life because it is still living. All of those microorganisms are living. They are also what are pleomorphic. They are also essentially able to change their shape. This is one of the points and discoveries that was confirmed by Rife, Raymond Royal Rife, who produced or developed a microscope that did not kill off its specimens. And he observed what he called pleomorphism, where an organism that was a virus under a different set of environmental circumstances changed into a bacterium, and under different changes was able to, environmental circumstances changed into something else. So there is a precedent for all of this. These things have been observed. But the idea here, instead of looking at MMS and chlorine dioxide as a dynamism between the good guys and bad guys from a microbial standpoint, I suspect that the true, if there is a bad guy, all right, and I like to get away from that too, but if there is a bad guy, it is the non-living. So in other words, the microorganisms, the living microorganisms, are showing up in response to the inundation of non-living, life-suppressing, and intending, because the intention behind the drugs, the chemicals that we are taking into our systems, that we are ingesting, the intention is to suppress certain forms of life. Now, the problem with that is that it creates water that is out of balance. It creates an imbalance in the microbial mix, and it doesn't even get rid of life. But if that intention is to suppress life, when we take the water in that is chlorinated, for example, it suppresses microbial life as well. And dysfunction begins to occur because microbial balance is upset. And what happens when we have microbial imbalance? We have the suppression of certain necessary elements, minerals, as well as oxygen, hydrogen, those types of things. But when that occurs on an ongoing basis, dysfunction begins to occur, and in time, what we call disease. But what happens then when you have the disease? We go on into the doctor, and what does the doctor do? They give us more chemicals that are also suppressing life. And the imbalance of the body is actually accelerated. The process is perpetuated and actually made worse. Now, you may get over the problem of the moment, but unless you get back to balance, which the method itself didn't do, then you're not healthy yet. You cannot be out of balance and in health. So you can't have an environment that is out of balance and is healthy either. So what we do is, when we get well, we then assume that the treatment actually cured us, and we don't realize that it was us. I have seen people who have simply by relaxing, by letting go their stress, affected some major and profound improvements in their health, simply by letting go, by breathing deeply, by getting joyful, but letting flow occur. They have allowed and experienced some amazing transformations in their health. And this is something that we can all do. But the first alternate theory is that microorganisms, whether they are aerobic or anaerobic, whether they are fungal, whether they are yeast, whether they are tumors for that matter, are actually all living. And they are living, and in so being, life and representing life, then they are not there to cause harm. And when you're talking about icky stuff, you don't want to forget parasites, because they really seem to be alien, or the aliens inside us. There's even a science show that's called Monsters Inside Me, and we're all conditioned to have this aversion to natural microorganisms, and we don't question why they're there. We just assume they're there to do us harm, because we have associated the degradation and the degeneration of our health with the onset and with the arrival of these microorganisms, and we assume that they are the problem, when in fact they are coming in response to a real problem, and that is the unliving, the non-living stuff that is part of what we are relying on to support life. They are, in fact, there in response to harm that has not yet been acknowledged, that has not yet been seen and understood, and the behaviors of which have not, that have brought that harm on, have not changed. And so they are there essentially to prolong life, to cope, to help the body to cope as best as possible, to maximize its presence here. And hopefully we get the clue, we get the willingness, we get an inclination to change our behavior, change our environment, change our responses to things. And those are the things and steps that can help bring about a change in the actual, our health itself. Now, you're listening to Talk for Food on webtalkradio.net with Adam Abraham. And I am and have been talking about MMS, talking about some of the causal factors, presenting an alternate theory on how it works and what it is actually doing. Now, part of that is this. What we've seen is that people have benefited from the use of MMS, from the use of chlorine dioxide, and we've seen it in some amazing ways. The other thing, in terms of an alternate theory, this isn't really an alternate theory, but it's a clarification. We've been thinking that we knew that there's an electron exchange, all right? At first, so the oxidation happens by the change of electrons, where as a result of contact with chlorine dioxide, the oxidant is giving up up to 5 electrons to the oxidizer. That's the chlorine dioxide. And then ultimately, the oxidant is no longer. It's reduced. I believe that the chlorine dioxide, first and foremost, is responding to the presence of the inorganic, the non-living. All right, that's one thing. But also, let's suggest that the living, the microorganisms, even though they are, or even including the anaerobic, are also responding to the presence of the inorganic, the non-living stuff as well. We know we need the minerals. So while we've cultivated an idea that germs and minerals and stuff in water is undesirable, the truth is you cannot have healthy life without a balance of minerals as well as microbes, all right, aerobic and anaerobic. Having them present is not the problem. The problem basically becomes when you don't have the minerals, you don't have the life, and you have this out of balance state, this unbalanced state. Now, the other part of this is that there's a process, and this is a place where learning about nature and how nature works is really exciting, because there was a study done in the year 2000, I believe, 2001. And the study was done by, and it was published in the Journal of Food Protection and in 2001, and it was conducted by USDA scientists in Texas. Now, this had to do with sodium chlorate as a potential treatment of salmonella in pigs. And this was done by the USDA. And this report that I'm going to cite here was published by the Ministry of Agriculture, Food, and Rural Affairs in the province of Ontario, Canada. Now, what was happening, this is a demonstration of chlorine dioxide. in the treatment of food, of pigs in particular, when pigs are processed, there's an evisceration process that occurs, and there is also salmonella and E. coli present. And it's an issue because when the animals are eviscerated as a part of the process, their feces gets on the meat. And if the salmonella that exists in their feces is not dealt with, then you have that problem persisting and becoming part of the meat that the consumer is eating. Well, they came up with the idea that chlorine dioxide could reduce that. Their way of doing it was to give the pigs sodium chlorate tablets prior to slaughter, okay? But in so doing, they found that there was a 150-fold reduction in the number of intestinal salmonella within 16 minutes of treatment with the chlorate. It produced a significantly large effect. Now, that was in that, in this food processing thing. What was fascinating was their description of how this worked. They said that salmonella and E. coli both contain an enzyme known as respiratory nitrate reductase. Now, this enzyme coincidentally converts the chlorate, which is a ClO3, to chlorite, which is ClO2, which is chlorine dioxide, okay? And which in turn kills both pathogens. So in other words, the respiratory nitrate reductase enzyme is what is a part of the conversion process to produce the chlorine dioxide as well. And it is the mechanism that kills the host being the anaerobic microorganism, the salmonella and the E. coli. And it also said here that the healthy or aerobic microorganisms do not have that particular enzyme. And so this explains why healthy tissue and aerobic microorganisms are not affected by chlorine dioxide. It's because they do not have the respiratory nitrate reductase enzyme. They do not carry it, and therefore they are not affected by chlorine dioxide. And so many people have said that this was not possible, this could not be, and they've claimed that this, they've claimed fraud and so many other things. And here is something, objective, scientific test. And of course, now this was done almost 10 years ago, and they were saying that it needed FDA approval, and I don't know that it's been done yet. And yet, here is quantified tests that have been published of, now in this case, it's pigs, but you're talking about the same bacterium, the same microorganisms. And again, the problem is not the microorganism. The problem is the environment that supports the existence of it. But when you change the environment, there are mechanisms within in nature to basically, okay, this is not needed anymore, as in the case of salmonella and E. coli, and there is a mechanism within that for them to be eradicated with no problem. I mean, this is a beauty of nature that we are still starting and I have to say, have yet to really appreciate, but we are beginning to. We are generations into the practice of using unnatural synthetic chemicals as substitutes for what is natural. And the fact is, they are going to be responded to as aliens. And that is part of the problem. They become disruptors of physiology, of metabolism, and the body must respond to it as aliens, because they are. The thinking is alien. The intention is alien. It's about killing something off. When in fact, if the environment is given what it needs, the environment will address these things on its own. It'll address these conditions on its own. So what I want to do is probably stop there, because I'm coming up to this point already of realizing that I'm toward the end of the show already, and I've been talking all this time. I hope this is helpful to you, because we have been, I met some people in London earlier this year. One young guy who I have talked about, and he was a guest on this show, Steve Light, on dialysis at 26 years of age and had been on there for 3 years. And then I met an older lady, Margaret Hewitt, who rheumatoid arthritis and lost a husband to prostate cancer. What are the common denominators here? The common denominators are chronic illness and also water. I mean, we need to look at things differently. How is water treated and what is in it? I was just shown just yesterday a documentary on fluoridation, and fluoride is also part of this process. These are methods that we have simply given a pass for a long period of time, and yet they are affecting our physiology, they're affecting our metabolism, and they are contributing to the onset of disease, because they bring about dysfunction and they call for a response by the living aspects of our body, the microorganisms which actually create and maintain our body. That is their purpose. Their purpose is to maintain the functionality of our body, to prolong our existence. That is what the living does. And we have grown accustomed to thinking upon them, or thinking of them as invaders, and thinking of them as aliens, and thinking of them as of harmful intention. And we look at the effects that we've been experiencing and we blame them for it, when in fact we have ignored the true causes, which is the non-living stuff that we don't see, but they are responding to. So I'm providing this alternate description, this alternate take on what is happening, that we might begin to become partners with our microbial population, with the trillions of cells that make up our body, the trillions of trillions of viruses and bacteria and stuff like that. They are not there to do us harm, but we need to look with clear eyes of what happens when these chemicals that are synthetic and that are inorganic and that are truly alien in their energy, and they are disruptive in their energy, when they are brought into our system, what are the effects? Because we are living examples of what happens. Our health is a living proof of the principle that there is a problem that is occurring here. Now, the point is, the solution is not in doing more to eradicate the living. The solution is in undoing our relationship with the unliving and restoring balance, getting back to balance in our body, mind, and our spirit. So that's all time I have for today. I hope you have enjoyed this. If you have any questions or comments, you know you can reach me at adam@talkforfood.com. If you're interested in the MMS DVD series, you can go to understanding-mms.com or go to the store, shop.understanding-mms.com. You can look for it there. Visit my blog, Thought for Food, which is on WordPress. You will see some of the articles and some of the exchanges that have occurred with the people who really see MMS as something that's charlatan and everything else. Understand that we cannot have change by doing things the way we've done them. And you can't have conscious change without being conscious and seeing things in a different way and being willing to take a different path. This is all we're doing, and we're doing it with eyes open and hearts open and minds open. At any rate, until next week, be well, be yourself, be in love, be here, be now, be one with that great power that is within you, always in love. And until next week, this is Adam Abraham. Thank you for joining us, and we'll see you when Talk for Food returns on Web Talk Radio, talkforfood.net.
Talk for Food is a Phylos Media Works production.